Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood.
And we've got a big show this week, Randeep. Mostly because we got an absolute ton of listener questions coming off Vancouver's disappointing loss to the Edmonton Oilers on Thursday night, as things seem to be reaching a critical mass in this market and with this fan base after yet another dismal performance from the Canucks, this time against a divisional opponent in Edmonton. And oftentimes we spend a little bit of time off the top breaking down the way the Canucks have been playing, breaking down their last game. I don't think we're going to do that this week because there wasn't much to break down after the way they fell to the Oilers on Thursday in Edmonton. So instead, we have to talk big picture, and we have to talk about what's going to happen now. Where does this organization go? How much desperation is there for them to change the mix with this group? And what do we expect ahead of what actually is turning into a pretty big game Saturday night against the Capitals on home ice?
Yeah, there's a lot to chew on here, but I think, you know, when it comes down to it, Batch, your best players need to produce, and we haven't seen that from JT Miller. We haven't seen that from Elias Pettersson, and they're both very different circumstances. We've seen it from Quinn Hughes. He's been able to do everything he can, but, you know, this is a team right now that is working on a very low confidence. The vibes are off. And I think one thing we really got to focus on here, the JT Miller drama, what's going on there, whether a trade comes or not, that aside, and listen, Elias Pettersson is part of that conversation as well, but let's just assume that JT Miller gets dealt. You know, the pressure on Pettersson is only going to grow. So I look at this and I say, you know, this is a player that across the board compared to last year, he's just not producing. His expected goals are down. He was 64th in the league last year per game. Now he's 108th. Even simple things like slot passes. He was 57th in the league last year. He's 92nd this year. Controlled entries, 43rd last year, 94th. He is nowhere near the player even that he was last year. And we know half of last year was not good for him. So I think, you know, overall, the team vibes are off. They're not clicking. But this team is only going to go as far as the collective of their top players. And JT's been off this year. And Pettersson has been off too. They got to up it, especially their $11.6 million man.
Yeah, and we've been hearing from a lot of fans in the wake of that loss, and we'll get to some of those questions coming up in the second segment. We're going to break really early this week to make sure we can get as many of those questions in, but we've reached a point now where a lot of people seem to have completely lost their faith in this core group, and I'm seeing the sentiment out there more and more: trade all of them, blow it up, start fresh, even if that means sort of a mini rebuild here. Get rid of Miller, get rid of Pettersson, you know, probably get rid of Besser, as things seem to be trending that way ahead of the deadline anyway, without him having a long-term contract. And it's certainly understandable that many in the fan base feel that way, because to a certain extent, I feel that way as someone that watches this team on a night-to-night basis and covers them as closely as we do. These guys have not been good enough this year, and especially in Pettersson's case, as you allude to, with that big ticket, $11.6 million cap hit, and the no movement clause kicking in officially in July, there is some urgency here for this management group to make a decision on this guy, because they'll be stuck with him for the better part of a decade if they elect to keep him and it ends up being the wrong decision ultimately.
Well, and you know, I was looking at some of the stats yesterday, over 82 games, playoffs and a regular season combined, Elias Pettersson has 56 points, Batch. You know who that reminds me of? Jonathan Huberdeau when he got to Calgary. Like, the numbers are almost identical. And I know I'm combining playoffs and regular season.
And Pettersson's a whole lot younger than Huberdeau was, too. So there's still plenty of time, theoretically,
for
him to right the ship in terms of his game.
And to his credit, Huberdeau's starting to right the ship a little bit in Calgary. But my point, though, is over 1 year, you know, that's how low his game has been at. And I know there's been the two-way game, which gives him a little bit of shine there, but you got to up your game. And, you know, this is a town that loves its hockey. It can be critical at times, but you got to back it up. fan base in this city wants players that work hard and are able to produce. And with Elias, I know he's trying his hardest. I know there's certain games where you can see him kind of thinking. He throws that hit on Matthias Ekholm. He's trying to give his team a spark. But in the end, the hockey world and this market will judge you based on your production. And over the last 82 games, that hasn't been there.
No, and this is something I heard Jason Brough talking about on our morning show as well. These guys don't look like they're having a whole lot of fun. They don't look like they're happy, and they don't seem to have that same level of pride in wearing the jersey that some of the Canuck greats of the past have. And I think that's so important in this market, right? A guy like Stan Smeal has his number in the rafters for a reason, because he was a Canuck through and through. Say the same about Trevor Linden, about Kevin Bieksa, Daniel and Henrik Sedin, whoever you want to go to. Do you get that vibe from Elias Pettersson? Well, do you get it from JT Miller? I certainly get it from Quinn Hughes to a certain extent based on the way he's performing, but there aren't enough guys that I think understand the importance and the weight of putting on that jersey every night, and I think that's a factor here as well, to be perfectly honest. And I know that might be pretty brutal to say, but the way this team has played has been pretty brutal.
Well, Batch, I'll give you an example. I spent a good chunk of the weekend with Kevin Bieksa this past weekend, and he still bleeds Canucks blue and green. Like, he's a guy that is a lifer. We see him on the broadcast. He's times 10 when it comes to the Canucks off air as well. I don't get that sense from the current generation of Canucks right now. And listen, it might be a different generation of athlete. Maybe they look at their allegiances to teams differently. But you need heart and soul characters. You know, Kiefer Sherwood brings an element of that. He's willing to do whatever it takes to win. But you need multiple guys to think that way. You need a pack mentality. And right now, we just haven't seen that from the Canucks' top players. And I would argue even up and down the lineup, but especially the top players.
Yeah, so there's plenty for us to get into here. It's going to be a very interesting edition of In the Booth, to say the least. We're going to break early, as I said. We'll come back on the other side, and we'll get into a massive mailbag and answer all of your questions around this team. You're listening to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. I'm Brandon Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. We're going to get into the mailbag in just a moment. But Randeep, as always, we have to remind the listeners that In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
That's right. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. And they've also got Dine Out Vancouver going on for lunch and dinner. So an extra special reason to check them out over the next few days.
Absolutely. Make sure you get down to Bells and Whistles. Also need to remind you that if you're listening to this on the radio, you missed any part of the show, it lives as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. So subscribe to that podcast feed. You'll get Canucks Central every weekday with Sat and Reach. You'll get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick, and you'll get In the Booth as well. It's also the place to go, and we should mention this with all the noise around this team at the moment, for emergency podcasts when major Canucks news breaks, which it could do in the coming days, hours, who knows, with all the rumors around JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, among others. So you want to make sure you're subscribed to that, because you will get the latest analysis from Sportsnet 650 on any breaking trade for the Vancouver Canucks. Okay, let's open the mailbag. And we solicited questions on Twitter and on Blue Sky this week, Randy, but we got a good response. Let's start with Sinky on Blue Sky, who writes in and says, how did this team fall off the cliff so badly from this time last year? EP and Miller are shells. Team can't defend and looks disinterested in playing together to win. How did we get here? And I wanted to start with this one because it's such a big question that, you know, honestly, we could take the entire show to unpack. How did we get here? What's happened? Why is this happening to this team right now? So it's a good place to start, I think, because we can work through some of this together.
Yeah, the easy answer would be there's a lot of things going on at once, right? And I think the first suggestion or the first kind of point that the texter mentioned was Pettersson and Hughes not going. Excuse me, Pettersson and Miller not going. Hughes is definitely going. But, you know, this is kind of where it starts for me. You've got one of your triumvirate, if you want to call it, in Quinn Hughes doing his thing and playing all world. But the other two, they haven't been able to hit the ground running. They haven't been able to, you know, generate this year. They haven't been able to drive play. So, Batch, I think often sometimes we oversimplify things in hockey, which is a game that's based on a lot of randomness. But it all starts on, are your best players better than the opposition's best players on any given night over 82 games? And thus far, for Vancouver, through 47 games, that hasn't been the case. Quinn Hughes can take over a game. He can do it to a certain degree. But I think the starting point in this conversation for me has to be JT Miller and Elias Pettersson simply not bringing it this year compared to the level of competition.
Yeah, and there are some reasons for that, at least in Miller's case. We're not quite as clear on Pettersson because his struggles have really been, you know, a calendar year now as opposed to for the first half of the season, like with JT Miller this year. We know he was banged up through training camp. Even if he hasn't wanted to admit it, there's been times where he's been banged up this season. He had to go on the 10-game leave of absence, which we don't have a whole lot of detail about. And, you know, I think there are plenty of legitimate reasons to criticize this team for where things have gone wrong. And, you know, believe me, we're going to devote a lot of time to that, especially on this week's show after the way things went in Edmonton on Thursday night. But I think there is also a legitimate case to be made for that famous Jim Rutherford line of, if everything goes right, we'll be a playoff team at the start of last season, because then everything did proceed to go right. And not only were they a playoff team, they were a division winner. They had home ice in both series. They got to play a game 7 on home ice in the second round and ultimately fell short. So a lot of things went right, basically right up until Thatcher Demko got hurt in the second half. Everything had gone right for the Canucks last season. And as much as I know people won't want to hear the injury excuse, and again, it's one of many factors that we could get into, but the number of top players they have had out of their lineup at times this year, Demko didn't play till December. Hronek missed 21 games. Hughes has missed a handful of games. Pettersson's missed games. Miller had his leave of absence. Dakota Joshua, who was such a big part of that third line that helped the Canucks drive play down the lineup last year, has been a total non-factor this season, both you know, because of the cancer diagnosis and then obviously the subsequent injury and trying to get up to speed. And I think one thing that is becoming very apparent is how hard it is for guys to get up to speed when they miss significant time or miss training camp in Joshua's case, because he didn't look like himself when he was in the lineup. I think Filip Hronek hasn't looked like himself since he's come back into the lineup. So, you know, that does play a legitimate role here, and we do have to acknowledge that and address that. But I think, you know, the more concerning thing for me coming out of all that is the way this team has responded to that adversity, right? Because sometimes you go through a tough patch, you go through adversity, but you battle together as a group and you come through on the other side and it makes you stronger. That's not what we've seen from this team. And especially with the lack of effort and lack of intensity and lack of give a you know what that they showed on Thursday in Edmonton, it seems to have gone the exact opposite direction, where they're not going to try and battle through this adversity. And in fact, it's getting the better of them.
Well, another thing along those lines is that when we compare it to last year's team, there's more of a pack mentality with last year's version of the Vancouver Canucks. It felt like, you know, if you got through one of them, well, there you go. You had another layer of Canuck to kind of try to smash through. And at some point, they wore you down. And I thought your point about Dakota Joshua, yeah, that's a big one, right? This is a third line that was used whenever it felt like maybe the game was on the ropes or you needed a response. That third line was the line that Rick Tocchet heavily leaned on to swing the momentum back in the favor of Vancouver. So, you know, not having them to be kind of the line when you have to go out for mop-up duty late in the game or you have to go and smash and grab some momentum, that's been a huge, huge step backwards for this team. Now, the other thing is, I think we're seeing it more recently in the last 5 to 10 games, definitely the last 10 games, actually, where they've gone 2-6-2 and they've allowed 34 goals in their own net and scored 17. But it's, we're not seeing a connected style of play. We're seeing a lot of individual plays. We're seeing, you know, players in some cases not doing enough. In other cases, players trying to do too much. So, you know, it does come back to that. You know, I say it last year, pack mentality, where this year you're not having that connected style. Whether that's on the forecheck, it feels like it's one and dones. One player goes in and that support forward is not there. Or between the whistles, as recently as the Corey Perry incident on Quinn Hughes, there was a little bit of a pushback in the third period. But when your captain is essentially, you know, slammed down to the ice like that, I want to see a bit more, Batch. I don't care if it's Corey Perry or somebody else. I want to see the Vancouver Canucks say, hey, not on our watch. And compared to last year, this team is just not playing as connected in a couple of different ways.
And I think a factor that leads to that, and it's something that we should discuss, and it's going to tie into our next question too, is the noise around this team and the speculation affecting guys and it affecting their play too. Because I think that's evident at this point. We've even heard some rumblings out of the dressing room of guys around the team or the coaching staff saying, you know, yeah, it's bled into the room. It's bleeding into our game. It's become a problem. And this isn't unprecedented, even with this core group of the Canucks. I can remember, and, you know, you'll forgive me for not remembering the specific year. It might have been Bruce Boudreau's second year, ultimately, before he was let go, where in the lead up to the trade deadline, the team struggled with consistency, struggled with stringing performances together with a lot of focus around them. And, you know, maybe that was right after Rick Tocchet took over, actually. And he sort of said, yeah, it's a tough time of the year to be playing like this because there's all this noise around the team. Who's going to get moved? Who's not? And, you know, you're only human. That's going to affect you to a certain extent. So that's kind of what I've thought about with some of the really bad performances we've seen over the last 10 days or so, is I wonder if the noise and the speculation and who's going to get traded, when's it going to happen, and that sort of Damocles hanging over this team's head is impacting the way that they're playing. And as I said, this ties into the next question from Sandro on Blue Sky, who writes in and asks, does a trade or two even fix whatever's rotten at the core of this group? And my answer to that is it depends who's going out.
Yeah, and it also, to a certain extent, right, when we're talking about the moves that we've been discussing in this market are not, you know, around the edges. There's been a lot of down to the core, and specifically moves involving the core of this team. So, Batch, I agree. You know, I think you can, this team does require something different right now. And I'm not looking at coaching. I'm looking at the players. I think the players are the ones on the ice that are failing, excuse me, to execute what the coach wants. And listen, Rick Tocchet has a demanding style. He, you know, you need to be able to play hard and work hard in his system. But you look at a lot of teams that have won the Cup in recent years, going back a decade. Bruce Cassidy is one of the most demanding coaches in the NHL. Guess what? He won a Cup. Mike Sullivan, who won back-to-back Cups, is a very demanding coach. Rick Tocchet was on that staff, and the leaders on that Pittsburgh team, Sidney Crosby, Geno Malkin, Chris Letang, they worked hard, and guess what? There's a trickle-down factor. So, you know, that idea of, hey, this is a demanding system, I'm not buying that. So I'm looking at the player group, and I feel like you have to have a bit of a deep cut here. There's been a number of years where this core has worked together. Last year, it seemed like it was a step in the right direction, but everything has gone sideways. We not only hear about the internal scuffle or struggle or whatever you want to call it, like not a literal scuffle, but in terms of just not being able to get along or whatever it may be, but on the ice, it's been bad. So I do feel like you do have to make a pretty deep cut here. I don't think a middle six forward or a depth defenseman trade is going to shake up the roster, but you have to be very, very careful here, because when we're talking about potential franchise pieces, you can't get pennies on the dollar back either.
Yeah, and you know, to answer the question from Sandro, I think a trade or two could fix what is ailing this group, because everybody seems to be just waiting for that to happen. And, you know, much like I talked about, you know, guys were antsy before the trade deadline. I think there was that sort of vibe around this team in the days leading up to when Travis Green was fired and in the days leading up to when Bruce Boudreau was fired. Now, I don't think we're leading up to a Rick Tocchet firing. That isn't the sense I get, because I completely agree with you that, you know, with this core group on the third head coach now, the onus and the responsibility is being put on them rather than Rick Tocchet for it going sideways yet again. But once that big move comes, guys that are still here in that dressing room can exhale and can go, okay, they've made the move. We have some certainty here. Now we can sort of reset and work forward. And it doesn't mean it's going to be the only move, right? As Sandro alluded to when asking, does a trade or two even fix whatever's rotten at the core of this group, right? It might be two trades, might be three if they have to move on from Brock Besser before the trade deadline. Who knows? But I do think that right now this is a team that's waiting for something to happen. And once something does happen, that often shakes guys loose a little bit and allows them to play more freely. Our next question from Strong Billy. Again, these are all sort of tied in together with the sentiment around the organization and around the fan base right now. Strong Billy asks, is there any hope for this season? And my answer is there is always hope until you're mathematically eliminated. And the Canucks, even though they're, you know, 3 points back of Calgary now and the Flames have a game in hand, they are a long way from, you know, not having any hope. I know it feels bad right now, but a hockey season is a long, long year. And it's often a winding year, too, where there are highs and there are lows and things go well and things go wrong. And one day you feel like you're on top of the world and the next day you feel like you're at the bottom of the pile. And the Canucks are going through one of those bottom of the pile moments right now. But it doesn't mean that this season is completely lost, at least not yet. But I think there does need to be some urgency organizationally, whether it's with the trade or finding some way to get this group motivated and fired up to make sure that the season isn't lost, because it's looking anyway at this point like it's starting to slip away from them.
Well, you'd hope that this is rock bottom for this team, that it doesn't go any lower, right? That's the hope. But you start looking around at the competition that is going to be fighting for a playoff spot. Calgary's won two in a row, and listen, they work hard. They don't maybe have the most skill in their lineup. They've got some young players stepping up, but every night, you know you're going to get an effort from Ryan Huska's lineup. The other team, Utah, that's the other team I'm watching. They've won three in a row, and same thing. They work hard. They've got skill in their lineup. They could probably add a little bit more before the deadline is up. So with Vancouver, this is a very skilled lineup. Right now, to your point, they're kind of just waiting. They're in that waiting game. Now, if you can string together three or four wins, even two or three, let's not even get to the three or four conversation, Batch, they're right back in this. It's a three-point gap right now with Calgary. And at some point, I can tell you, the Calgary Flames are going to lose a couple of games in a row. That's the way it goes. But what Vancouver has been unable to do since December 1st is win back-to-back games. You string two or three wins together in a row, it's going to make a huge difference. It's going to give you confidence. But I look at that group of competition for the wild card, in second wild card, it's not a murderer's row of opponents. So there is a path back. There is a path back for this team to make the playoffs. And I know that sounds outrageous right now with everything that's going on the market and trades. But even with trades being made and a big piece taken off this roster, you're going to get something back of substance to play in your lineup. I still think this team has enough skill, but you cannot wait any longer. It's 47 games in. You have to start making that change right now because they are in free fall. You got to turn this around.
Our next question comes in from our good buddy Andy Cole, producer of Halford and Brough right here on Sportsnet 650, who writes in and asks, why are the Canucks? And I can certainly commiserate with Andy on his feelings.
I was going to say because they are right now, right? That's all I got. I have no logic behind that one.
The Canucks are what they are, and they are that right now. So thanks for writing in, Andy. We appreciate it. Another one from at DeekyPete1640 on Twitter. Will the suffering ever end, and is there a bigger coward in the league than Corey Perry? And Canuck fans aren't going to want to hear this, but I don't think Corey Perry is a coward. Corey Perry will mix it up with almost anyone in this league if he has to. What he did against the Canucks on Thursday night was calculated. It was, you know, absolutely to his brand, to the kind of player he's been throughout his career, which is he gets under the skin of his opponents. He's great at it. And, you know, what did he do in that situation? First of all, he grabbed Quinn Hughes and threw him to the ice. And I can completely understand from his perspective why he would do that after Connor Garland, you know, held on to Connor McDavid at the end of the game on Saturday. But then what does he do? He goads Teddy Bluger into dropping the gloves with him in a situation where the Canucks were going to be given a power play, and that takes the Canucks off the power play, and it's a 4-on-4 situation. So I don't think Corey Perry's a coward. I've seen him go to war in the playoffs. I've seen him have battles with very tough guys in this league. I just think he's very smart at doing exactly what he does best, which is antagonizing his opponents.
We talked about this last week on the podcast, where it's the old Eddie Guerrero school of thought, right? Where lie, cheat, steal, work the dark arts, and on that play against Connor McDavid, Connor Garland was able to do that. Well, guess what? If there's an embodiment of that mentality in the NHL, it is Corey Perry. He picks his spots with the best of them. Leon Draisaitl mentioned this after the game as well, where he can be, you know, a guy that drops the gloves, or he can be the absolute biggest pest in the NHL, and he's going to laugh at you and he's going to smile at you. He won't even motion towards the scoreboard to say, look at the score. He's just going to smile at you. And that's the way Corey Perry plays. So in that moment, I don't think it's out of character for Corey Perry. That's who he is. I have no issues with it, because if a similar player was doing the exact same thing on the Vancouver Canucks, I would have no issues with it. Now, here's what I have an issue with is I thought the Canucks, and Bass, we were talking about it. We wanted to see a fired up response from Vancouver. If you're getting dropped in that game, if you're getting smacked around, well, stand up for yourself, stand up for your captain. With all due respect, you know, I like the fact that Teddy Bluger was trying to do that, Mark Friedman as well. But even before that, you know, stand up for your captain a little bit more than that. Come on. He's a guy that's gotten hit a couple of times, three times that I can recall. We saw that, obviously, with Corey Perry. There was a Siplikov hit, open ice hit, against the New York Islanders. There was another hit in the Carolina game from Jordan Martinook. And those are three that I can remember that there was no immediate response. Hey, listen, I might be thinking a little old school here, but I remember certain times last year where Dakota Joshua, Nikita Zadorov stepped up for Pettersson and other teammates after they got hit. It rallies the group together. So it tells us something about this group right now. Maybe they're thinking a little too individualistically. But Corey Perry was not in the wrong. I thought that what was wrong was the Canucks' reaction. And that's where I think you need to have a little bit more pride in your team. You have to have a little bit more fight for the guy sitting next to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're both in alignment on that, that there have been times this year where this Canucks team has not pushed back hard enough. Even, you know, like, you remember Siplikov on the Islanders hit Quinn Hughes in the open ice earlier this season, and there was no response to that. And again, it's a clean hit, so I can understand that, you know, that's, you know, a little bit different than this situation with Corey Perry, but you need that Wolfpack mentality, and that's a mentality that this team doesn't seem to have.
I'll give you another one,
at the moment.
Gouley on Lekkomäki, right? Young kid, it's an open ice hit, it's a hard hit. And remember in Montreal there, I think there were about two or three hits in that game early by Montreal. They were trying to set the tone. At some point in time, I'd like to see a player just step up and say, all right, enough of that. Last year, that player was Zadorov. This year, I'm still searching. I don't see him.
Our next question comes in from Ivy on Twitter, who writes in and asks, how long do we have to wait for management to move some pieces via trade? This team has been atrocious for the last couple of months, and a change needs to happen sooner rather than later. And I think it's clear that the organization understands that. I think it's clear, based on Jim Rutherford's track record of being sort of a gunslinging general manager, and now he's the president with the Canucks, who isn't shy to make changes and tweak things if he feels that needs to happen. What I think we're seeing, though, is that they want to make these moves and they're not getting fair value for them. And they're not, at this point, willing to take a massive L on a trade just to shake up this mix, which I think you know, if we take ourselves out of, you know, how frustrating it's been to watch this team of late, and you look at the bigger picture, you know, if I asked you as a Canucks fan, in theory, without the emotion around this, would you rather them lose a big trade, but it salvages this year and they start playing better and they make the playoffs this year, but it hurts them in the long term? Or would you rather they wait, make sure they find the right move that makes the most sense for them in the long term to be a competitive team, even if it means missing the playoffs this year? I think most fans of this team, or at least the ones we interact with doing this show and through our text inbox here on Sportsnet 650, I think most fans would say it's not about making the playoffs one year. It's about setting the organization up in the best spot possible to try and win a Stanley Cup at some point in the future. So while you can see this season slipping away and it all feels very dire and very desperate right now, and I think there is a certain extent of that within the organization, they're not just going to make a trade to make a trade if it's going to be a big loss for them and is going to hurt this team down the road.
Yeah, it's a challenging situation to be in because this organization, this management team has said, hey, you know, we're in it to win it. We think if everything goes right, once again, we can be a contender. We know that hasn't been the case this year. But as much as you want to make a move right now, we're not talking about fringe pieces, right? If this was a deal to do with a, you know, the 12th forward of the group or the, you know, the sixth or seventh defenseman, that deal would have been made right now. But is that really going to shake up the group enough? We're talking about JT Miller. That's the name that's been out there. And if you're making a deal, sending away a 100-point player, a player that is arguably, if not the best power forward in the NHL, he's a top two or three for sure. You better make sure you're getting maybe not a king's ransom given the Caps situation and obviously the situation in Vancouver. There's a lot of noise here that works to the detriment of the team. But you want to get, you know, is it 75 cents on the dollar? Is it 60 cents on the dollar? That's not what is being offered right now. And I'll give you an example. The example that I think of is going back to way back in 2017. When everybody in the hockey world was yelling at Joe Sakic to trade Matt Duchene. And he didn't. He didn't until November of 2017. He waited multiple months. That was the discussion in the offseason. Nothing happened in the offseason and finally made that deal. And he got a lot back in that deal. You know, that pick that turned into Bowen Byram, Shane Bowers, Samuel Girard. Go through it. There's a bunch of picks. I'm not saying JT Miller is going to get you that. What I'm saying is, even though it looks bad right now, is there a value for this organization to wait and get a little bit more out of this deal? The Matt Duchene deal was for a player that was younger, and obviously there weren't the cap situation that the Canucks have to deal with, JT making such a big number when it comes to the cap, but are you able to get away from these lowball offers? Are you able to get a little bit more out of it? And that's the only value in waiting, Batch. So, you know, I think that could be the case. But you have to weigh the here and now of the team's in a bad way, they've got bad vibes right now, and they're plummeting in the standings versus, you know, to what level can you lose this deal? Because I do feel like when you're trading away the best player, you're going to probably lose the deal. 90% of the time you do. So you just got to weigh, you know, when is that time? Well, how much longer are you willing to wait? You know, sometimes you just got to, you know, spray away the stench, right? And That's really the issue that Patrick Alvin has right now. It's saying, all right, what's the best deal I can get? And if I don't get it, can I wait for hopefully this value to shoot up again?
Yeah, and we'll see if, first of all, there's a move that happens imminently. Second of all, if not, do they make a move prior to the trade deadline? Or do they kick the can down the road multiple months like Joe Sakic did in that scenario and wait till the summer to try and make these moves? I think everything's on the table right now in terms of possibilities around when and if these trades are going to happen. Princess Erica writes in and asks, and this is a good question, I think, and there's a season that comes to mind for me. I'll be interested to know what you think, Randeep. But Princess Erica asks, are there past Canucks seasons where they have been able to turn the season around and still make the playoffs? I'm trying to find ways to be hopeful. And it's not a like for like comparison, but my mind immediately goes back to the 93-94 Canucks season where they ultimately went to the Stanley Cup final and lost in Game 7 against the Rangers. And look, I'm not saying they're going to have that sort of massive stretch run this year with the way things have gone, but that was a season where they qualified for the playoffs as the seventh seed in the Western Conference, so they were one of the bottom two seeds. They barely snuck in. They were underdogs basically in every round of the playoffs, and it was also a season where they made a pretty big mid-season trade that ended up helping them down the stretch. In late March 1994, they got Jeff Brown, Brett Hedekin, and Nathan Lafayette from the St. Louis Blues for Craig Janney. And all three of those guys are pretty much household names in Vancouver now for the impact that they had on that Canucks run. So, you know, it's not an exact comparison. It wasn't a team that was necessarily languishing, but, you know, they didn't comfortably qualify for the playoffs that year, and they did bring in some pieces and make some big moves during that regular season, and ultimately it worked out for them. So depending on what the return looks like in some of these trades, depending on how it shakes up the roster, depending on how guys respond if trades do happen between now and the deadline, this isn't a lost season by any means yet, even though it feels that way right now.
Yeah, and the Craig Janney reference is a really interesting one, because one-time 100-point player, he ended up getting 90 points once in his career. He had 80, like very JT Miller-esque profile in terms of career arc. So interesting mention there. Now, if the Canucks could get a package like they got for Janney way back when, I think they'd be happy with a couple of really strong defensemen. It's possible, Batch. Like, there is a way out of this. And I'm going to say the reason is, if we were talking about, you know, a playoff race where you had absolute, even thoroughbreds in the wild card, like we're talking about the Colorado Avalanche, and imagine another team that was up there and they were going shot for shot for the top two spots in the wild card, challenging their division, I could get that. I don't see that here. So part of it is, can you make a deal? Can you get the vibes going again? Can you get these guys playing lighter? They're not squeezing their sticks. They're not tense. And at the same time, Utah and Calgary are not teams that really scare anybody, right? These are teams that are going to be jockeying for position. I'll throw St. Louis in there as well, even though they've played a couple extra games. So I think there is a path. There is a way to do it, but you have to figure out, A, what that move is, and I feel like it's got to be a deep cut yet again, and then you got to find your identity as a team. And, you know, maybe it happens, or maybe you're just kind of in purgatory the whole time. Like, once you make that move, you have to kind of see that what team you have at that point, and you got to run with it. And either the coach can make it work, or you're kind of where you're at and you stay there. So there is a path, no doubt, but I just feel like that move has to come first. I just don't see they're in quicksand right now. How do you get out of that is the question.
Yeah. And you know, not everybody will have experienced this, but I think a lot of listeners can, you know, think back to a time where maybe they weren't in a great working environment in their job. And whether it was one person that was making it tough to go to work every day, or the overall culture in your office or your workplace or whatever it might be, and then something changes. And whether that's you decide to leave and go find a new job, so in this case, you're the JT Miller, or whether someone that you didn't see eye to eye with or was making things difficult for you in your workplace, they leave or get let go. And, you know, suddenly, like, I can think back to an instance where this happened with me, where, you know, when that person is gone, you're like floating on air coming into work, because, you know, the bad environment in the past has moved on from you, and you're good to go. So, in fact, I can think of multiple instances of that in my working life, basically ever since I started working at McDonald's when I was like 15 years old. So, you know, don't think that NHL players are any different than you or I or anyone listening going to their jobs. Sometimes the work environment isn't great. Sometimes your working relationships are not positive. But when things change, it can make a world of difference in terms of how you feel about going to work and ultimately your job performance as well.
And listen, we're not in the room. We're not, you know, on the benches when these games are played. We don't know what that communication is like. So we can just assume, but we can also, and Batch, you and I are in the locker room, you know, the last availability that Quinn Hughes had was telling, right? One-word answers from a guy that usually is not the most chipper out of the bunch, but at the very least, he's usually willing to give you answers. And you could sense a frustration on Quinn Hughes where you asked the first question and he hit you with just literally a second of an answer. And you can tell this guy is built a certain way. He's a winner. He's one of the best, if not the best, at what he does in the world. And all of a sudden, to be stuck in this rut, it's bothering a bunch of guys. So sometimes, you know, we don't know what the specifics of the conversations and if there's, you know, drama and all that. But the fact of the matter is, we can physically actually see it on their faces and how it's weighing on them. And it just feels like something's got to change.
And this ties into another question from Bjorn on Blue Sky, who writes in and basically asks a very simple question. Why should I watch another game? And I can definitely understand the mentality around that question and the frustration with this group. All I'll say, and I'm going to take a page out of the late Jason Botchford's book, he always used to say this, life moves fast, and it certainly moves fast in the NHL. So while it feels like right now there is no hope for this team, things can change, and they can change quickly. And whether that's a trade that happens or, you know, some sort of roster decision that Rick Tocchet makes that shakes his group, or whether they just, after another disappointing loss, come into the office to face the Capitals on Saturday and look in the mirror and look at each other and go, okay, this isn't good enough. It's time to get our act together here. Things can change, and they can change quickly, and momentum is a funny thing. So right now, I know it doesn't feel like that's going to happen, and, you know, I'll be perfectly honest, I don't feel like that's going to happen until there's some sort of change organizationally here, and the most likely change is a trade. But, you know, the beauty of watching sports and following sports is going through both the highs and the lows with your team. And if you stick with it through the lows, then the highs feel that much better. Think about how great this city and this fan base felt with this team's performance in the playoffs last year after what had been a dismal decade leading up. You don't get that peak, that high, that joy of seeing this team have that success if you weren't with them through the tough times too. So unfortunately, we didn't expect it to be a tough time like this so soon after what happened in the spring, but that's where things are. But this is part of being a sports fan to a certain extent as well. Trust me, I follow Manchester United. I'm going through it right now in the same way that many Canuck fans are going through it.
Absolutely. And, like, you know, listen, Arsenal hasn't won a title in over 20 years, right? So who am I know that feeling as well from my fandom. But I look back at, you know, the peaks have been, unfortunately, not that frequent for this organization. The valleys have been plenty some, and yeah, it can be tiring. It's emotionally heavy. I get it. When you care for something, you know, that euphoria when you're successful like last year feels like the best thing in the world. But then again, you get back into this and it's the old Rob Schneider, oh bleep, you know, we suck again, right? But that's the reality of fandom. And I'm not going to tell anybody how to fan, but this is the question. The reason you follow this team is because at some point, you're going to be back on the top of the mountain, and it feels that much better. This is about, you know, the journey. When you go to the depths of the ocean or depths of, you know, kind of your sorrow, and you're back and you're happy, it's a new lease on life to in a sports sense. So I'm with you. I think, you know, I'm a diehard fan of any team that I follow. It's through thick and thin. You follow them because you love them. That's really the reason. You follow them because you have the social connections you develop, but you also follow them for one day you're going to be on top of that mountain. We don't know when that day is going to come, but I'm very, very confident that's going to happen here in Vancouver, and it'll be good. It's just a matter of figuring that out, Batch. When it is, we're still searching for that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Only time for another question or two, as we got lots from you guys on the show this week. Trevor writes in and asks us to dissect Rick Tocchet's system honestly. And it's a good question, Trevor, and I understand that the head coach has come under a lot of criticism in the market, which is going to be natural when the team plays like it has. What I'm going to say is that I don't think we can honestly dissect Rick Tocchet's system, because I don't think we've seen this team executed at the level that he's expecting, right? There were no questions about his system and the way he wanted them to play last year when they were winning the division. And basically up until their offense dried up in the playoffs, Rick Tocchet could do no wrong in this market. So, you know, he wanted them to open it up a little bit more offensively to start the year. I think he was forced to go back to more of a conservative mentality with some of the injuries and the struggles for this team. And we are seeing improvements defensively. I know it doesn't feel like it, but they're one of the best shot suppression teams in the NHL since the Christmas break. So they are doing a better job in their own zone, but it's like Tocchet always talks about, it's the key mistakes, the loud mistakes that are costing them games right now. And that's going to come to the forefront and people are going to look at that and go, well, why is the coach telling them to do that? The fact of the matter is, we talk to Rick Tocchet most days during the season. I do an interview with him before every game. And if you listen to what Rick Tocchet is saying, like I see a lot of the criticism out there on social media, oh, it's dump and chase hockey. Rick Tocchet almost every day says he wants guys to hold on to pucks and make plays. And they're just not doing it. And the head coach can only do so much. He can't go out there and play. I mean, I wish Rick Tocchet could, to be perfectly honest, because the way he played is exactly the kind of player that this team needs right now.
Well, he would have stood up for Quinn Hughes, no doubt about that.
Yeah, exactly. 100% Rick Tocchet would have done that. But, you know, this is a long-winded way of saying that I don't know if I can properly dissect Rick Tocchet's system because I don't think he has the horses or the players to execute it properly at the moment. And part of that will be on him because you need to adapt your playing style to the guys that you have. But in Rick Tocchet's defense, the vast majority of this roster was here last year, too, and nobody was complaining about it then.
Yeah, I think the underperformance of the roster and the players is first and foremost. I know there's a lot of appetite of, hey, it's not just the players. The coach has to be better as well. With everything that Rick Tocchet's had to deal with this season, the injuries, moving players in and out, the amount of players that they've used compared to last year, which is, you know, more. Yeah, he's had a lot to deal with. Now, I alluded to this a little bit earlier on. It might not be the easiest system. It might require you to be really well conditioned. It might take a lot out of you. But Stanley Cup winning programs and systems and coaches demand a lot out of you. That is the standard. You don't lower your standard because things are hard. I look at the star group in this and the core group of this team at looking at how they should elevate their game. So to me, it comes down to the players. The other aspect of this, and you mentioned this, is, you know, does he have the horses? Of course, when you start looking at the defense, Hronek Hughes he has, but I think we can certainly ask questions about whether he has enough players that play a certain style. The Vinny Desharnais experiment has been a failure. Let's be honest, you know, $2 million for 2 years. Whereas Ian Cole for 1 year at 3.1 or $3 million bucks would have made more sense. But hindsight is what it is, right? But there are certain things that I think Rick Tocchet needs more out of his players, and he needed some different players. So part of that is on the players. I think management also believed in players that maybe haven't delivered. And Rick Tocchet's a part of that too, right? He makes those assessments. They go after players after he provides his feedback. I'm not going to rip his system to shreds because it did work last year. I just think most of the blame needs to go on the players right now for not executing, but some should go to management and coaching. But I think it's a matter of, did they get the right players? Did they have the right players in mind to execute the system?
All right, that does it for all the time we have on the show this week. Thanks, everybody that wrote in with questions, and apologies to those questions that we didn't get to on the show this week. Randeep, before we get out of here, you're going to be on Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi on Saturday night. What do you guys have coming up on your show?
Yeah, we're back in studio. No more minus 20 for me. It'll be the Battle of Ontario, Ottawa, and Toronto. And then we've got the Capitals and the Canucks. So let's see how that one plays out against the best team in the NHL.
And I'll have the call of that game right here on Sportsnet 650 alongside former NHLer Landon Ferraro. A 7 o'clock puck drop on Saturday night. The pregame show begins at 6. Thanks for listening to In the Booth right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.